south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Just to clarify something I said on the last show, I was talking about how down here in Latin America, they put fluoride in the salt, which I think or hope they don't do up in the States, but it wouldn't surprise me. That said, every time you go to someone's house for dinner or to a restaurant, you're getting dosed with fluoride. I'm talking about down here in Latin America, of course. Last show, anyway, I never did get to mention what to do about it. At least, that's the consensus of some of the latest emails I've been getting. What to do? Well, just cook at home and don't use that salt. That's it. And of course, as we all end up doing occasionally, we end up at someone's house or at a restaurant, so you're gonna get dosed a little bit. But it's up to you how much you want to expose yourself to that. But you have to know it's worse up in the States because when you go out to eat at anyone's house or a restaurant, they're cooking with that water that's got fluoride in it, which is not the case down here in Latin America because the water isn't fluoridated. But you know, it seems down here as well as up in the States, people oversalt everything, including throwing a heapful of salt in the water before they boil anything too. And if you're like me, a person who doesn't add extra salt to practically anything, that means every time you do eat at someone's house or go to a restaurant about a half an hour to an hour later, you're absolutely parched and dying of thirst. I'm sure a lot of you folks know what I'm talking about. That's happened to me hundreds of times down here. So yes, you might say I'm that finicky guy that sends food back to the kitchen when it's oversalted. At restaurants, I've been known to do that when nobody else at the table does. But you can't very well do that when you're eating over at someone else's house. That just would be rude. But of course, even 20-some years ago when I was up in the States, to me anyway, most restaurants up there oversalted everything, especially the fast food restaurants. Anyway, to resolve that problem down here in Latin America, just note that if you cook a lot at home and you read the labels and never buy that salt with the fluoride in it, then you're just not going to get any extra fluoride. And for those of you guys and gals out there who don't give a damn about fluoride, well, go ahead and pour it on. But remember, Germans gave fluoride to the prisoners in concentration camps in World War II. But of course, those benevolent Nazis gave fluoride to their prisoners so they'd have good teeth, right? Fat chance. They gave it to them because fluoride dumbs you down, makes you docile. Go ahead and look it up. But don't expect your dentist to tell you that. Not on the record anyway. All right, enough said about that. Now, I have to report that I went to a wedding this week. And yes, it was one of those special gringo Latina marriages that you hear about but few people get to attend. Because down here off the tourist trail, gringos are so rare. And the gringo? Well, he lives down here in Latin America and is an expat wisdom seminar attendee. Funny how that kind of thing happens, huh? And the Latina? He met down here a few years ago at a Walmart, believe it or not. Anyway, since all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes up in the States, and you folks in Cleveland, of course, unless you come down here for yourself off the gringo tourist trail, you'll never get to see a wedding like this. So, I'm going to fill you in on a few little highlights that are sure to make you laugh. Now, first of all, let me mention that if a first world gringo or gringa hooks up with a middle class Latin person, like in this case, and do recall that middle class Latin America is basically lower middle class first world style. And in this case, the bride came from a solid Latin middle class family. And do note that in every Latin country, it's pretty much a given that a lot of the people from her side of the family, or his side of the family, are going to be coming into town from way out in the boonies. Since every Latin family that lives in the big city has a good part of their extended family living out in the boonies. There'll be farmers and fishermen, agricultural workers, whatever. We're talking about an extended family of small town folks who sometimes only get to the big city once or twice a year. Because remember, even most middle-class Latin families do not have cars, or cars that are decent enough to make a long trip. Meaning, the only way to get to the big city is by, you guessed it, chicken bus. So, why am I bringing this up? Well, it's because I just found out recently that the grandfather of the bride, who lives on his own small farm way out in the boonies, about 200 kilometers from the big city where the wedding was, and for you metrically challenged folks out there, that's about 150 miles away. Now, this guy who wears a cowboy hat all the time now, a guy who really does live off of what he produces, well, the day before the wedding, he rode the chicken bus in to see his granddaughter, bearing gifts, of course. And what did he bring, you might ask? Well, now, don't take this as a stereotype or a cut down or a put down. I'm just reporting the facts, Jack, so this is the absolute truth. And don't think this is rare. It's not uncommon at all. What he did was he brought a live chicken on the chicken bus. I mean, why do you think they call them chicken buses, right? And by the way, for those of you who always thought the chickens rode on top of the bus, as you'll see, this story proves otherwise. Anyway, now remember, this is like a 4 or 5 hour ride. And as I heard the bride tell the story, and she did it with no embarrassment at all. In fact, she laughed about it and really felt it was a nice gesture. So it turns out, even though she's a somewhat sophisticated big city girl, she also knows how things are down here, obviously. Anyway, as she pointed out, he transported that live chicken on his lap, holding it for that 4 or 5 hours by the neck and head, the only parts of the chicken that were actually showing. The rest of its body, and it was a big chicken, was wrapped in a double-layer paper bag so that the chicken would have somewhere to poop, of course, and not do its business on his lap. After that 4 or 5 hour ride, when he finally got to the bus terminal in the big city, he was met there by his daughter, the bride's mother, and they took another chicken bus to her house. Then they both immediately went into the kitchen. She broke the chicken's neck, and they both stripped the feathers and do what else you'd do with a dead chicken. And she prepared a nice free-range, what I call, driveway chicken dinner. Then, mother and grandpa called up the daughter, invited her over, and broke bread over an extremely fresh and newly dead chicken. You better believe this was no Tyson chicken. This one was guaranteed free-range, no hormones, preservatives, or additives. So, you might ask, how did the bride-to-be react to all this on the day before her wedding? Well, she was more than happy to see her grandpa, who she hadn't seen in months and months, and she was more than thankful to have that nice, fresh chicken dinner. Oh, and by the way, her grandpa also brought her a big bag of her favorite mangoes, a type that only grows on the lowland coast where he lives. Now, you might not have known this, but Latins do have their favorite mangoes, since there are at least 12 different types. And that's just down here in Central America. And believe me, they're all very much different from each other. Which always makes me laugh to think how stupid we gringos can be. Because, you know, I recall when I lived back up in Chicago 20-something years ago, all of my friends and acquaintances, as well as myself, thought there were only one kind of mango in the world. Because we only saw one kind of mango in the grocery store, when they were there at all. Boy, were we wrong. And now, you know, over the years, I've developed my own special taste for a certain kind of mango, which is only in season about a month to a month and a half out of the year. So when that time comes, I really load up. When you come down, you'll find you have a favorite too. Only you do have to come down to find those things out. All right, so now that I've told you that little chicken story, I do have to mention that the new bride didn't come out and tell this story voluntarily. Not because she was embarrassed or anything like that. For her, it really wasn't much out of the ordinary. That stuff happens down here all the time. It's just that when the couple were going through their wedding gifts a day or two after the wedding, making a note of who gave what for thank you cards and all that, when it came to Grandpa's name and the bride told her new husband that he brought a chicken, etc., etc., he, being a gringo, just cracked up and had to have all the details. So, here they are. Now, the way this wedding turned out, about half the people there were gringos and gringas from my expat wisdom seminars, most of them living down here permanently now. And the other half were Latinos and Latinas from the bride's side of the family, of course. Again, almost all of them middle-class Latin American style. Now, talk about the gringo advantage off the gringo tourist trail. Get this. I understand that after the wedding, the most repeated comment from the Latin American contingent at that wedding party, the talk amongst themselves, of course, in Spanish, the word going around at the party was that every last one of those Latin folks was thrilled to be among all those rich, good-looking gringos and gringas. I'm not kidding you. That's what all the Latin people were discussing amongst themselves. And that little tidbit was revealed to the bride from the bride's sister. Remember, Latin folks off the tourist trail, that is, are way too timid and reserved when they're among gringos to ever say something like that. So unless you know your Spanish really well, you're never going to overhear that kind of small talk. But I'm here to tell you, that's what they're saying behind your back. I mean, it could be worse, right? And the fact is, you know the gringo advantage is in full force in a place like that, when the rumor is that we're all good-looking, handsome, and wealthy, and, well, we're not. I mean, I was there, right? But, you know, even the scruffiest of us gringos do clean up well. Oh, and another thing about Latin weddings. Down here, it's perfectly normal for it to say on the wedding invitation, let's say 3 o'clock, and the wedding is actually at 4, because everybody knows people always turn up late. And not just fashionably late either, like 5, 10, or 15 minutes. Figure a half an hour to an hour. So, anyway, in this case, the invite said the wedding was at 3 o'clock, but it was actually arranged to be at 4. Meaning the wedding invite had mañana time all factored in. So anyway, 4 o'clock rolled around and most of the spectators, including the groom, were there already. But the bride and her entourage didn't actually arrive till well after 5. I think it was 5:30. And that's just how things are expected to be down here. In fact, as soon as 4 o'clock rolled around, a lot of gringos at the party were looking around thinking that maybe the wedding wasn't going to come off after all. I mean, an hour late for the bride? A sure case of cold feet if it had taken place up in Cleveland. But all the Latin folks that were there were unconcerned as usual and just having a good old time. Then, as 4:30 hit, some of the gringos flashed concerned looks at the prospective groom. Meanwhile, the Latins in the crowd carried on as usual. Then, as you might expect, as the bell tolled 5, even the groom was getting a bit worried. Even as he reassured all the gringos that she was on her way, or at least he thought she was on her way. But note, he didn't have to give any such assurances to the Latins in the audience. Then, when she finally did arrive, and it was well worth the wait, she and her entourage offered up no other excuse but to say that the hairdresser slash makeup artist was a little slow on the draw. And that was it. That was the excuse for an hour and a half wait. Or basically a 2.5 hour wait if you're talking gringo time. Yet another example of things that gringos will just have to get used to. Because you can't change that. I mean, look, Italy is somewhat a Latinized country too. Before Mussolini came along in the 20s and 30s, nothing in Italy ran on time either. And he did make the trains run on time. Of course, we all know he eventually got hung by his thumbs in a public square. So, after Italy's little brush with precision and doing away with the guy that made it happen, the trains never ran on time again. And the moral of that story? Well, there is a moral somewhere, I just can't think of it now. Anyway, that said, it's further proof that you really should come down here and live off the gringo tourist trail. That's where it's happening, man. No matter how much you resist it, you'll definitely be thrown into a lower gear, and you'll be better off for it, believe me. And you'll live longer, too, guaranteed. So, do note, every one of my Expat Wisdom Seminar alumni who've moved down here, and that's quite a few now, practically every time I run into them, I hear a brand new round of gringo advantage stories. Yet, when I'm on the gringo tourist trail, like in Panama, Mexico, or Costa Rica, I never hear stuff like that. Not anymore. And since I mentioned Expat Wisdom and Expat Wisdom Seminars in a roundabout way, don't forget about my upcoming July 2014 Expat Wisdom Seminar. This time it'll be 6 full days and nights again, with attendance limited to 25, so get on board. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin American Seminar link somewhere at the top of the page for full details. If you have any questions, email me at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. Now, speaking of the gringo advantage, one of the persons at that wedding mentioned to me that he and his wife went exploring in Central America, way off the gringo tourist trail, and in their travels, they happened to have stumbled on a very nice hotel resort complex in an area known for its beautiful thermal hot springs, known by local tourists, that is, not gringos. Anyway, to their amazement, since hardly any gringos ever came through that area or that hotel, they say from the moment they walked in the place, they got the deluxe treatment. They ended up spending 4 days at that hotel, using all of its services, as well as signing off the restaurant bills to their room, all the while for the full 4 days, They were never asked for identification. Not a passport, not anything. They just signed the register, and that was it. In all that time, they weren't even asked to give up a credit card for the front desk to make an impression. You know, as a deposit for extra charges, etc. They never asked, and it never happened. And at that, this gringo couple was truly amazed. Now, they and I know that would never happen to a Latin couple that came into that hotel to register. And we all know that would never happen up in the States. Maybe 30 years ago or more, but never these days. Now, to change the subject just a little bit, I'm getting more and more emails from people saying that when they come down to Latin America, many times the places that accept U.S. dollars won't take $100 or $50 bills, even if there's a sign in the window or on the menu that says, we take U.S. dollars. So be aware that some of these places will only take 20s or less. And oftentimes they won't even take 5s, 10s, and 20s, saying that there's some kind of a defect with them. Whether it's a tear or a pencil or a pen mark, or even one of those very common bank stamps, a star or a number. You've seen those. And arguing with them won't help, even if your Spanish is perfect. Fact is, if you withdraw money from an ATM machine down here or a bank, many times those very same dollars, those 10s and 20s and 5s, won't get accepted by the very bank that issued them. And note, ATMs down here won't put out anything larger than $20 bills. The same thing often happens in establishments that say they accept U.S. dollars too. When you hand your 10 or 20 over, the cashier will look it over very carefully, then call over his or her supervisor and they'll look it over very carefully too. Then oftentimes that supervisor will disappear somewhere into an office where someone else looks at it. So by the time it's been scrutinized like that, the chances that they'll accept anything but a fresh, unfolded, pristine bill become less and less. Now, I've tried this myself. I've taken dollars out of an ATM machine in a bank, walked over to the teller window, and had a few of them rejected as I tried to redeposit them. Like, that makes sense. But, you know, this is Latin America, and those are things you just have to deal with. Now, I know I sound like I'm complaining about this, but in reality, it's a great gringo business opportunity. Imagine setting up a kiosk saying, we'll take your bent, stapled, and mutilated U.S. dollars for, let's say, 95 cents on a dollar. I'm sure you'd have all the business you could handle, especially if you were in a busy mall or on the gringo tourist trail. Note here I said on the gringo tourist trail. In fact, if I wasn't so busy myself, I know of a few places I could set up a kiosk like that and make a mint starting tomorrow. And in fact, not only would I take bent, stapled, mutilated, and folded U.S. dollar bills, I'd buy gold and junk jewelry too. So, a lot of gringos do get frustrated when we go to a grocery store, let's say, and try to pay with dollar bills because the exchange rate is better. Remember, I did a show like that in the past on how in some places you can pay with either the local funny money or the U.S. funny money. And that obviously you should pay with the one that has the best exchange rate. Anyway, a lot of us gringos do get frustrated when there is a very good dollar exchange rate and they won't take them because they find some defect. Even if to you it's no defect at all. But you know, if you really get frustrated, there is kind of a way to get even. At least you can stick it to the guy or gal on the other side of the transaction who's screwing with you. At least make him feel a little stupid. But be aware they're not screwing with you because you're a gringo or for any animosity or personal reason. Those cashiers really do want to make a good impression on a gringo, and it's not that you've lost your gringo advantage when you're up at a counter paying with dollars. The fact is, when a cashier accepts any kind of U.S. dollars, they generally write it down in a little book. Then, at the end of the day, if those U.S. dollars are rejected by the bank they deal with when they make a deposit, the cashier has to make good by buying back those rejected dollars with his own personal funny money, which, as you might imagine, is not a good deal for him or her. Because now how is he going to trade that U.S. funny money that he had to buy back into his own currency when the local banks won't accept those dollars because they have some kind of defect in them, like an ink mark or a tiny tear? Anyway, for a cashier, it's like a catch-22, which they try to avoid at all costs, as you might imagine. And that's why cashiers generally over-scrutinize U.S. dollars. At the end of the night, they don't want to be stuck holding the bag. And besides, if that happens one too many times, they just get fired. But like I said, you can get some satisfaction when you're put on the spot like that. And believe me, the first few times it happens to you, you don't feel good. It's like getting your credit card rejected because you're over the limit. You think the people around you and the cashier are now thinking you're kind of a deadbeat. You know what I mean. And it gets even more embarrassing if they reject 2 or 3 or even 4 of your U.S. bills in a row, which has happened to me. So if you have had enough of that crap and you're starting to come to a boil, turn the tables on them. And this is how you do it. If they finally end up accepting one of your U.S. bills, or you end up paying in their funny money, you will probably get some change. In their funny money, of course. That's pesos, colones, lempiras, or whatever. Then, when the cashier hands you that change, you do exactly what they do. You hold each and every one of their funny money bills up to the light, do it slow and obvious, and start rejecting them. Go ahead and make a good show of it, too. Take your thumbnail and rub the nose or cheek or beard of the genocidal dictator on the money. State that it doesn't feel right. It could be counterfeit. Then you say to the cashier, "This bill is not acceptable. I want another one." And then this always happens. That person will look quite flustered for a second, but they'll oblige and give you another one. And that's right, you do the same thing to the bill they just gave you. Reject it. Do it 2 or 3 times. And of course, everybody will be watching. You'll be holding up the line because you'll be in some kind of checkout line, that's for sure. So after you've done that a few times and make the guy feel like an idiot, you've really made your point, believe me. And yes, I've played that little game 3 or 4 times this year already, and I've actually had a pissed off manager or two come over to check out the problem. And I've also gotten a few Latin customers waiting in line to crack a smile when they see exactly what I'm doing. They get it all right. They really seem to enjoy the entertainment. But alas, not every gringo can pull that off because you have to know your Spanish pretty well to play a game like that. But do give it a try. You'll certainly have a lot of chances to do it. And by the way, with this rejection of your U.S. dollar business at the counter checkout line, it's not at all like a cashier is trying to pull a power play like you might see up in Cleveland. The cashier will give you no attitude at all when they reject your bills. You'll notice when they do reject your dollars, they're often very, very apologetic about it, even to the point of putting on a sad face themselves. And you know, I've seen this with some of the ladies, that they actually feel bad, saying things like, "Lo siento, señor, discúlpame," which means, "I'm sorry, mister, please forgive me." So, as a rule, Latins are sympathetic and nice even when they have to do something unpleasant, like reject your dough. Now, to change the subject once again, I noticed that when fresh gringos come down here for the first or second time, they always say, "Johnny, I see so many words in English down here," and sometimes Spanish and English mixed together. But I found that one of the words that really confuses fresh and new gringos is the word sale, S-A-L-E. And that's because when you go to retail stores, like clothing and shoe stores, for example, you'll often see the word sale on the window or on the rack, just like up in the States, or the word oferta, which looks and sounds almost like the English word offer, O-F-F-E-R, only in Spanish it's spelled O-F-E-R-T-A, oferta, meaning on sale. And the more you're on the gringo tourist trail, the more you'll see that word sale, S-A-L-E, instead of the traditional word in Spanish, oferta. So you'll see that quite a bit on the gringo tourist trail. The word sale, like up in the States. I said on the gringo tourist trail. But you will see that word occasionally show up off the gringo tourist trail too, especially in high-end shopping malls. There, you'll find all those first-world franchise stores like Guess and Payless and Nike, Sears and Diesel, etc., stores that are catering to a higher-end, more educated crowd who they believe speak English well enough to understand the meanings. So, in effect, by putting up English signs, they're pre-qualifying their customers because Latins truly stereotype their own people who speak English as people in higher income brackets, which basically they are, unless, of course, they speak English because they got deported as illegal aliens up in the States. But that's another story. So here's what confuses fresh gringos. When they're well off the tourist trail, they'll see that word sale all the time, but it really doesn't mean sale at all. And though the letters are exactly the same as the word sail in English, they're pronounced sale in Spanish, sale, which means go, get out, or leave in English. Salir is the verb, which means to go or to get out. So anyway, off the Gringo Tourist Trail, you're going to see that all over the place, most often posted or printed or painted on garage doors. And what that word sale, spelled sail, S-A-L-E, actually means in that case is get out because you can't park here. It's a warning not to park in front of the guy's garage door. So in Latin America, they don't technically say no parking here or don't park here. They say, buddy, get your car the hell out of here. It doesn't belong in front of my garage door. That all can be inferred from that one little word, sale. That is why you'll see that word everywhere, especially in the big city and any place in Latin America where parking is at a premium. Here's where the confusion comes in on the other end. Latin Americans who live out in the boonies or in small towns, they've never seen that word sale used in any other way but leave, go, or get the hell out. So they're often quite confused if they make that rare trip to the big city and go to one of these retail shops and see that word posted on racks, on shoes, on clothes, and any other item that's on sale. For a moment, it's confusing and completely out of context for them until someone explains to them, if someone explains to them, that it means oferta or sale in English. Okay, we're getting pretty close to the end of the show now, and I have time to answer one weird email question. Now, after I mentioned traffic cops and stuff in one of the previous shows, I got an email from a person asking me about motorcycle cops in Latin America. He asked me some technical questions about the bikes and their equipment and stuff, and here's really all you have to know. There are quite a few motorcycle cops down here, but get this. The average size of the engine is only 200cc. Which means basically they're useless for chasing anyone. They just don't have the torque or the velocity. Even worse, or better, depending how you look at it, cops are often seen riding two on a bike. Whereas, typically up in the States, motorcycle cops up there have at least 650cc's and you never see them riding two to a bike. Occasionally, you do see cops with big, expensive BMWs. But that's all for show. They're just a handful of cops that are in the presidential entourage. While all the other cops get to drive 200cc rice burners.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.